Next thing we know, the guy pops out the window with the drone and throws it back at me and says, "Here's your toy back."
Welcome to the RC Roundtable Podcast, where we discuss the latest RC hobby news, events, model reviews, and a whole lot more.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 196. Yeah, 196.
That's what it says.
Yeah, of the RC Roundtable. Those of you watching video will instantly notice something is not quite the same. To explain that to the people listening, Fitz is not with us. He's in another country. Where is he this time? He's jetted off to Japan again?
Yes. Yeah, I think he's in Japan again.
Yeah. So the government has needed his services in another country, so they have whisked him away. So in his place, we have Garrett Holtgren. And hi, Garrett. So we will get to know Garrett a little bit better pretty soon. But first, we're going to talk about some new products, or maybe just one new product. What are you signaling?
We're just jumping right into it.
Yeah, we're just
going straight into the news.
Yeah.
No banter, just new product.
Yeah. So I'm not going to skip anything else here, but I was just a minute ago, I was reaching for a scratch piece of paper on my workbench here, and there was some foam board there. So I picked up the foam board, flipped it over. Look what it said on there. Lee's stuff. So, man, that's an old piece of foam board, because remember that auction that I bought not long after I moved to Green Bay? You found this auction hundreds of miles and hours away from me, and we both bought some stuff from it. And I had a bin that had all your stuff in there, and I put that thing on top to remind me not to steal it. And then you picked it up when you came here for AirVenture.
I think it's that huge pile of Dowel fanfold foam, right?
That was part of it, yeah.
And some CF88.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, there are a bunch of things in there. So if anybody doubts how cheap I am, I've saved this piece of foam board for at least a couple of years, and it's on its third purpose. I used it earlier today as a backdrop for some painting. So there you have it. I've got no excuse.
And now I'm going to jump in. This will be completely on. No one asked what my name was for the last episode.
All right, Cosmo Brown.
For the last episode. It was D. Freiberger. Yeah.
Oh, is that from the car guys?
Yes.
From they fixed up Mopars, right?
Roadkill. Yes. Yeah. So Roadkill Garage and Roadkill. Well, what you just showed is something that I just love that David does for all his builds or his fixes. He pulls out a piece of cardboard and he makes a list, of everything that has to be done. He checks it off. And it's like, when I got my trailer, it's the first thing I did is I cut a piece of brown cardboard and I did a Freiberger list of everything for my trailer. So that kind of reminds me of that.
All right,
I wonder if anybody else does that when they're working on projects in their workshop.
Yeah, I'll bet the next time you visit up here, hopefully this summer, this same piece of foam board is going to be there and
ratted
and oil soaked. And yeah, waste not, want not. All right, so let's go into new products. The first one I hope is going to be unique. I'm thinking not many people have heard about it yet. A couple of years ago, I signed up for Multiplex's mailing list, and they send me, I don't know, it's like once a month, I get this email from them. And a lot of the stuff I see on there ends up not being available in the States. So I don't know if this is one of those or not. But it's a foam, what do they call it? Elapor, whatever.
Elapor.
Is that how you pronounce it?
That's how I pronounce it.
Okay. Whatever Multiplex's trade version of EPO foam is, it's made out of that. It's molded, and it's a scale, semi-scale Piper Pacer. And I thought it looked pretty cool. What's the wingspan on this? I think 1150 millimeters, which works out to 47-inch wingspan. So it's not tiny.
Let's see. Technical data. It's in M's. It's in MMs.
1150 MMs, which, again, I think that's like 47-inch wingspan-ish. Mm-hmm. Flies on a 3-cell, 2200 LiPo. Watch the video. And the main website, they say it's a beginner-friendly, and then they go doing knife edge passes down the runway.
But you have to learn German.
Yeah.
All the instructions are in German.
That looks like a great plane to overpower.
Yes, and probably easy to do. And the Multiplex Fun Cub is a very beloved design, and it looks very similar to that. I don't think it has flaps. It's a four-channel aileron, elevator, rudder, throttle. But I wonder if it's going to be available in the States, because you guys might remember Multiplex used to be imported into the U.S. through Hi-Tech. Hi-Tech RCD merged with Multiplex for a while, but that's no more. So there's a store called Mr. MPX that has Multiplex stuff, but I don't hear much about or from them. And it looks like all the prices, I just glanced at the website, it looks like all the prices are pretty much straight retail. So I don't know what the story is, but if anybody out there in podcast land knows of another source for Multiplex models in the US, let us know, because I'd be interested.
I have one of their old Weekender extras, if you guys remember that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good plane. Actually, still, that's one of my favorite planes to take out flying. It's a great kit. So if it's anything like that, I think it's going to be a hit.
I became a big Multiplex fan in the late 1990s when they had some Speed 400 designs. So there was the Pico Jet. They had that B-17 looking cargo thing. And oh yeah, I've got my Sonic Liner that I just picked up recently. Well, recently, a couple of years ago. So anyway, they have a lot of really neat stuff, and it was always well made. So,
well, the Twin Star.
Oh, right, my Twin Star. Oh, and you love the what's the one you liked? The pusher one.
The Easy Star.
Easy Star. That's it. Which was then copied to become the Bixler and so many other things.
I have the Easy Star, the Easy Star 2, the Easy Glider, and the Twin Star.
All right, I'd have to take an inventory to see what I've got. Oh, I've the Shark. Remember that? It's
oh yeah.
Yeah, so I've got one of those. Actually, I tried selling it at a swap meet last week.
Do you still have a Funjet?
A Funjet. I'm pointing at one that I bought at a swap meet last year. I've never flown it, but I bought it. It was originally designed for Speed 400. Whoever had it before me had already converted it to a brushless system. So I'm just waiting to get in the to get that one in the queue and get it going.
I've seen one reach the speed of foam.
Oh, wait.
The speed of Elipper.
You're saying Funjet. That's the little flying wing
fast with a pusher. Mover. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I don't have one of those. The one I have is a Pico Jet, originally designed for Speed 400. A little bit fatter and pudgier, but gotcha. Yeah, they've had lots of cool stuff. So anyway, I'm glad to see they're still around, still coming out with new designs. This one would be interesting to see.
Yeah, and if anybody listening knows if they're going to be available in the U.S., if you have some insider information, let us know, because Terry might want to get his hands on one.
I might. And this reminds me of a review I did a long time ago. It was a balsa kit of the Tri-Pacer, which is the tricycle landing gear version of the Pacer. And one of the variants shown on the plans for that model was a Pacer version, which was the tail dragger version. And I, at the time, liked the tail dragger version better. And so that's how I built it. And then that ended up killing the review because they wanted it as the Tri-Pacer. But long story short, now this one comes out as a Pacer. And the first thing I think, I wonder if I could convert that to a Tri-Pacer. So, you know, maybe I'm just wired to convert things. But
make it both.
Well, that was for this other model. No,
make it so we could actually do both. Like change the CG, maybe have the forward gear go forward. I'm sorry, this just seems like the kind of thing that'd be fun to do. Is you put a nose retract in there somehow, some way, right, and yeah. So it takes off as a tail dragger, and people see it land as a Tri-Pacer.
Oh, that'd be funny. But I know you're being cheeky, but that other model was not far from that, because all you had to do was rotate the main landing gear. You didn't have to change the CG. And the front landing gear just had a set screw that would drop it out. So it was really easy to convert back and forth. But yeah, I'm sure you could do something like that. But that reminds me of a thing I saw. It was probably on April Fool's Day. The Cub Crafters, you know, the Carbon Cub, they had some version that would like six wheels, like the all-terrain Carbon Cub. Did you see that?
No. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I did. Oh, I did see that. Yes, because they were like, they were just towing it, right?
I think it was taxiing.
Oh, but I thought they were just saw them towing it, and you could see the mains that were like this, you know, four wheeled mains, right?
Yeah, something like that.
I think I saw that, and somebody like put a caption on it. They were saying that it was a ground loop proof cub or something.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. So if anybody out there knows any information again about getting Multiplex in the US or about this Pacer specifically, let us know. We're interested to hear about it.
See who our insider might be.
I'll use some connections. I'll see if I can find out for you.
There you go. So, and with that, we're going to introduce everybody to Garrett. And to be honest, I think this is an introduction for Lee and I to Garrett as well. We've exchanged a few emails over the past few weeks, but we've never had an in-depth conversation before. So, Garrett, tell us a little bit about you, and we're mostly interested in how you got into RC.
Yeah. So, first, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Sure.
So I am the face behind Altitude Hobbies for anybody that's out there listening that's one of our customers. I am Garrett from Altitude Hobbies. You probably have corresponded with me at some point. But I've been in this hobby since, 2002. I started flying RC planes when I was 10 years old, and then that kind of evolved into my business, which has been up and running since 2011, and we sell a quite a wide variety of products that everybody uses across this hobby. So we have a lot of customers out there in the RC world. So I'm sure somebody's run across this at some point, but I got started flying RC planes because my brother, we both got into the hobby back when we were kids. My first plane was a Zaggy, if y'all remember that.
How could we forget?
Keith was, the gentleman on the show before, was not a fan of the Zaggy wing.
I love my Zaggy. The old brush motor, you wrap the thing in duct tape and chuck it and fly it. It was great. So I had one of those old high-tech single stick
radios, three channel Focus radio. 3.
I flew it on with the little throttle slider switch on the back. So
yeah, and you learned to fly on a Zaggy?
Yep, that was what I learned to fly on a Zaggy. Yep. So.
All right.
Yep. Learned to fly on that, and then moved up to some nitro planes because that's really all that was around back then. And it's just evolved from there. So that's how I got started in the hobby. Almost 22 years ago now.
Wow. So what was the catalyst to start Altitude Hobbies?
So when I was 19, I was going to school, working a few different jobs, and working in retail, and it was just not my thing. I was burnt out at the part-time job that I had. So I was like, you know what? I already have a lot of connections in the industry with different brands and companies that I was sponsored by because I was flying iMac for a while. Wow. So I had some connections with dealers, and they would give me dealer accounts. So I would sell stuff to some of my club members, things like that. So I just decided to launch a business. At first, I was like, I'm just going to keep it small. I'm going to bring in a few set items. And, if I make $100 here or there, it's what I'm making off my part-time job. It's enough to support me while I go to school. And kind of took off from there by a series of several fortunate events. one of the first brands that we brought in was Supo. And at the time, if y'all remember, Light Flight RC was selling Supo, and the couple that owned Light Flight decided to retire right around that time. So I kind of picked up the Supo line and ran with it. And then probably about 3 or 4 years after I launched was when Flight Test came about. And Flight Test, the guys over there, reached out to me. And it was back before they sold electronics. They were only selling the airplane kits. So they reached out to me and asked me to put together power pack combos for their kits so that people could buy their airframe and then come to my website and buy everything that you need, the motor, speed controller, servos, all the parts, accessories. So I partnered with them, and within a few months, I was shipping about 40 of those kits a day. So that's what really kind of took us off and made Altitude Hobbies a success. So within about 3 or 4 years, I got started getting more and more orders. I kind of knew that I arrived when one day I got an order from NASA. They wanted to buy a drone from me, a drone back prior to the DJI stuff really being out in the market. We sold the old iFlight frames. So they started buying a bunch of those from me.
So I had Disney calling me one day. They needed parts overnighted to Switzerland. They were filming a movie and something broke on a gimbal. They needed a motor. So then it just snowballed from there. I had the Canadian DOD calling me needing parts. I had Boeing and Airbus. Which, looking back now, I don't know what Boeing. I think they bought some glue from me, which may not be the best with all their parts that are falling off. But,
was it for a door? Was it?
It might have been. So
I don't want to. Damn door won't stay closed.
So yeah, and then it's just continued to grow from there. So this is a side business. I run it all on the side. It's pretty much just me and my wife helps me shipping products. So. When folks email or call or Facebook message or whatever, I'm the one that's writing them back, giving them advice and helping them find the parts for their planes. And when they're getting their orders shipped out, it's me packing it. So that's how it's always been ever since we launched 13 years ago. Is just a side business. So,
Well, if you look at the hobby now compared to when you started, you said 2002.
2002 is when I started flying, and then I launched the business in 2011.
Well, yeah, even 2011 to now, the hobby has changed tremendously. We've lost a lot of big distributors and manufacturers, and the story you just told sounds like it's been a gradual growth since then. So have there been any significant hiccups in that time?
I've kind of had an ebb and flow over the years, but that's honestly been more me, I've gone through periods of time over the years where I, kind of got revved up to bring in a bunch of new stuff, and then I kind of slacked off, advertising dropped off, that kind of thing. So it's definitely been an up and down over the last, 12, 13 years. But I've also seen it definitely correspond a lot to the industry. When I first started the business, obviously, it was mostly, RC airplane stuff was the popular thing. Everybody was wanting plane parts. Electrics were, becoming more popular, but unless you wanted to buy stuff from Hobby King and get it shipped over, you're waiting weeks or you're paying a ton of money to buy stuff stateside. So I kind of tried to bridge that gap, being just a side business where, I wasn't depending my whole livelihood on this. I was trying to make a little bit extra money here and there. So I was bringing in stuff from overseas, marking it up a little bit, not trying to make a ton of money off of it. So that's where I started gaining a lot of business, was people that didn't want to wait for stuff to come from overseas, but didn't want to pay an arm and a leg for it. And tried to really focus on a lot of products that you couldn't get elsewhere. And stuff that I use personally that I could stand behind and say, yep, this is a good product. This isn't junk. This is what I use in my airplanes that I fly. So, that's what kind of made it take off. And then as drones became more popular, I definitely saw a shift in people kind of getting away from the airplane stuff, because drones were the new latest and greatest. So then I started bringing in a lot more drone products back when it was, more of, build your own drone, the old DJI flame wheels and some of those kits where you had to actually put it together and wire it. So I kind of got more into that, shifted focus away from airplanes. Then it kind of went back to airplanes for a while. Then the little FPV racer drones came out. Everybody and their brother wanted those. So, got into that, but then businesses started popping up left and right wanting FPV racer parts. So then that slacked off. And then the industry was just developing so fast with the drone stuff that literally I would bring in a shipment of drone parts, motors, speed controllers, flight controllers, whatever, from China. By the time that I got it, they would already have a new version out on the market that they would announce, and nobody would want the old stuff because it, takes weeks to get it across the ocean. So just the turnover on the products just made it impossible to make much money on that. So that's the difference between airplanes and the drone market is, nothing's really changed in the airplane world. The Supo motors that I sell, that I brought in 2011 when I started my business, are the exact same motors I'm selling now. Nothing's changed. So not,
there. It hasn't been. I mean, we always have new products coming out, but the core group items that everybody's using today hasn't changed much since 2011, which is nice. So the airplane industry, I've definitely seen picking back up in the last few years. It seems like it's starting to grow more and more, which I'm excited about. So I think it's kind of hit that shift where the pendulum's swinging back a little bit more again.
Hmm. All right. What would you say is the hot item or hot category of stuff that you sell now?
Probably the biggest seller for us is our Leopard motors. Those have a huge following. I brought those in probably about 6 or 7 years ago. I was the only U.S. distributor for them. So those are very popular. They're a great rimfire replacement. They use similar, almost the exact same numbering system. So it's easy if you're building a plane that needs a rimfire. Look at the Leopards. They're about half the price. And we get raving reviews on them. They're a fantastic motor. So very well made. That's definitely one of our big sellers. And then Emax has always been popular. People love the Emax servos. And then we sell Roaring Top lipos, which we get a lot of good feedback on those as well. So those are probably definitely our big sellers, but we've brought in a lot of new stuff lately. So definitely been working on expanding our inventory.
Okay, cool. So is your store mail order only?
Yes. Yeah, we do sell to our local customers, but we don't have a storefront. So if somebody needs something, they can, we have a local checkout option on our website. So if one of our local customers needs something, they can just swing by and grab it. But everything else is just mail order.
You have to know the secret knock.
Yep, exactly.
Little door slides open. So Lee, I've got another question, but I want to give you a chance to ask whatever's on your brain.
Moi?
Yeah, you.
You mentioned that you had a deal with Flight Test. Are there any other kit makers that you work with?
Not anymore. I used to sell the Mesa RC kits, which were pretty popular. We had, there's a school here in Colorado where we're based, just a couple cities over, and a gentleman had started, he ran their after school STEM program, and he kind of ran with it. And they actually got a deal with, they got some grant funding from Otterbox, and they were able to buy some laser cutters and stuff like that. And they started producing, the kids in the school actually started producing RC kits that we were selling. They were kind of similar to the Flight Test kits. So I used to sell those a lot, and then the school kind of went a different direction. So they're not producing those anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, don't really have any partnerships with other companies right now. We just kind of try to pick and choose products that I know, you know, like I said, are sound items, and then where we really, I think, are kind of stand out from the crowd is if somebody needs to match up a power system to a plane, you know, you can email or call me, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. And that's probably a big core of my business is customers emailing saying, I'm putting together this plane, I need a power system, what would you recommend? And we'll kind of custom tailor a power setup for them.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I saw this on your website under your motors. You actually have a blog that talks about choosing the right power system for your plane.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's good for those people who are listening, might be new. You know, go check it out, altitudehobbies.com, and you can go click on the link that's, again, in the motor section. And you can learn all about sizing your motor. There's some charts here. You mentioned earlier that what was the name of the...
Leopard.
That you say Leopard, but is matching what?
Rimfire. Leopard's
pretty similar. Rimfire, thank you.
Yeah.
So you can see, there it is, E-Flight and Rimfire. I couldn't see it on this screen. It's right here on my right screen. but this is just a good, helpful starting point for some of you. And of course, I'm sure if you call him, you know, call Garrett, he'll help you build a flight pack for your aircraft. You know,
yeah, I put together that blog because that was probably one of the things that we get questions about the most often is motor sizing, because every company out there loves to use a different numbering system. Some use the stator size, some use the outer dimensions, and it's just confusing to folks. And obviously, you know, I know the difference between them all, but sometimes it you know, doesn't translate. So we put together that blog to hopefully help some folks out there be able to, if their kit's calling for a motor that gives stator dimensions, you know, they're not buying a motor that's outer dimensions. Because as we know, a 2826 in an outer dimension motor is very, very different than a 2826 in a stator. You're talking about six sizes different. So,
yeah. So what altitude are you at?
We're at Mile High, so I'm a little bit north of Denver, which is a Mile High city. So Denver's at 5280 elevation. We're up closer to Fort Collins, if anybody knows where that is. It's kind of between Denver and Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I'm sorry, I'm going to change my hobby store to MSL Hobbies.
Yeah.
I'm here in Houston. We're pretty close to sea level.
So yeah, that was the inspiration for the name.
The air is thicker down here. That's what we
are. Yeah. And that's what's honestly, it's tough because, growing up in Colorado, learning to fly airplanes in Colorado, everything flies different up here. We have to size everything different. We have to generally step up about an inch in prop size for any motor that we run, and we usually have to overpower everything. So that's definitely something that I have to keep in mind when I'm giving recommendations to people, because I always want to
overpower
everything. So I actually don't think it is. I should add that.
That's where I was going with the question.
The Lee footnote. Lee reminds us that altitude is a killer.
I used to live at 3,200 feet in Lubbock, Texas. I think it was 3,200. And even at that altitude, I had to adjust prop size usually. And I remember taking a vacation somewhere in Colorado, and there was a pass somewhere we went through that was 8,000 feet, and I had a plane with me. And my Lubbock setup at 8,000 feet was just a dog. So
it was actually funny when we were talking about the multiplex plane earlier. I was thinking about, I can't remember if it was multiplex or not, but years ago I bought a little ready to fly jet, and I don't remember what kind of jet it was, but it was designed to be a hand launch EDF. And I got this thing, I got it all together. It looked great. I was like, oh, this is going to be so much fun to fly. I go to hand launch it, and it literally just falls straight to the ground. Nose dives. So I couldn't get the thing off the ground. It was so underpowered. It flew great at sea level, but up here it would not hand launch. So I went to great lengths. It was too small to put retracts on. So I was like, I am bound and determined to get this thing off the ground. I made a little cart. It took some plywood, put wheels on it. I tried that just to see if I get up to speed on the runway and then have it detached from the cart. Yeah, it never.
Rocket engines.
Yeah, I actually thought about that. That was going to be the next thing I was going to try, is just mount some just rocket engines on there. Yeah.
You know, we have that. We have, the winter's the build time for people up north, but you have to also think about, hot summer days in Colorado are probably not the best flying weather either.
Right. Yeah, honestly, our summers aren't too bad. They've been more mild the last few years. Last year was actually really, really cold and rainy all summer. So we usually don't get much above 100, and it's dry here. So honestly, the summertime is great for flying in Colorado.
Another multiplex reference, as you talked about the multiplex jet, I glance over to my right, and I've got an old multiplex twister that I've had for years, and I hadn't flown in several years. And then something pushed me to get it down and try it out. I dusted it off a few weeks ago, put a battery on it, and it flew. I forgot how nicely it flies.
Is that stock motor?
No, it's same size, but I replaced it with one of the Great Plains ammo motors. So the original one was only good for 3S. With the ammo, you could go 4S. And so you get a little bit more push out of it, but it's still, I think, a 7-blade or 5-blade rotor. So it makes all kinds of noise and wakes up the neighbors, but it flies really great.
Yeah. Going back to that, the old multiplex Weekender Extra, those we used to sell a lot of the Supo motors for. The Supo 2826 was a great replacement motor for those when they came out, because I don't know if you remember, but when those first hit the market, people were having the motors catch on fire. They had a recall, on them because the stock motor. Mine never caught on fire, but my motor did burn out.
Did they overprop it or something?
I don't know. I don't know what the issue on it was. There was some defect in the motor, I think, but there was a long thread on RC groups where people were posting videos of their planes catching fire in midair and completely burning. So we started having people hitting us up left and right, and the Supo 2826 was like a perfect replacement for it. It was the right length, and you could still use the prop or the stock motor or spinner and props.
Methinks half of those fires were because they went from 3S to 6S.
Yeah, there's a very good chance.
Yeah. No, I loved my extra 300. I didn't, you know, I flew it. I had a great time, and I sold it to swap meet. But that was a good flying plane. Yeah. You still have yours, you said?
I do. Yeah, I haven't flown in a while. I need to get it back out. But yeah.
Right. Well, you mentioned a couple of times that Altitude Hobbies is your side gig. Can you talk about your primary occupation?
Yeah, so my full-time job is I actually work in law enforcement. I'm a sergeant for a police department out here in Colorado. I've been doing that almost 10 years. I've worked in a wide variety of first responder capacities, both volunteer and paid. I was a park ranger and an EMT for a while. Now I work in law enforcement and have for the last 10 years. So as part of that, I run a drone team for the police department that I work for. We use a wide variety of drones for lots of different purposes, as do most of the agencies across the country and especially here in Colorado. So not only do I use drones in the real world for different emergency response, but that's another aspect of my business is we're a DJI, Autel, and Teledyne FLIR dealer. So we specialize in the enterprise drone market, selling enterprise-grade drones to a lot of police departments, fire departments, search and rescue agencies all across the country. So it's nice because obviously the stuff that that I use in my job is the stuff that I'm selling and recommending to police departments and fire departments. So it's easy to be able to say, yep, this works or this doesn't work because I'm actually using it. So we use thermal drones, outdoor thermal drones, if we're needing to look for a missing person, if we're doing any kind of fugitive apprehension, if we have someone run from us and we're doing a canine track, we'll get a thermal drone up overhead. We can use it as a overwatch to make sure that our track team isn't walking into an ambush. There's a nationwide trend of canine track teams getting ambushed by suspects that'll set up and wait around a blind corner, wait for them to come around, and they'll ambush them. So having a drone up overhead, we can be checking blind corners, making sure that bad guys aren't setting up something to hurt them. Also, we found a lot of times if a fugitive is hiding in a backyard, as soon as the canine gets close, they'll hear it, they'll start jumping fences, and we can use that drone, the thermal on that drone, to pick up movement. So we use those quite a bit on a patrol basis. And then, anytime our SWAT team is deployed for, like a barricade or a fugitive operation, if we have someone that's refusing to come out of a house that's armed, we have, interior drones that we'll send into the, structure to help search for, and locate that person before our SWAT team moves in. So it's a great de-escalation tool. It's a great use of force minimizer because a lot of times when that person sees that a drone's coming in and has already found out where they're at, sees that they have a weapon, it causes them to kind of change their mindset. So a lot of times they'll either just give up or they'll move to a different position of the house, and then our SWAT guys can go in and get them in custody. So.
Huh. I did not know that type of thing existed. That's interesting.
Yeah. So a few years ago, right after we kind of deployed our interior drones, one of the first deployments I had, we had a, where I was helping out one of our neighboring jurisdictions. They had investigated a domestic violence case the night prior, where this guy had menaced his wife and discharged a gun into the ground next to her to scare her. So they had felony charges. He was former military, basically barricaded in a house when the SWAT team went out to arrest him. They pulled their armored vehicle up into the front yard, and he popped out the upstairs window with a 30-06 and started shooting at the armored vehicle, and then ended up going and secreting into the house, and they didn't know where he was. So they called me. I came down with our interior drone. I was able to fly it in the front door of the house, and eventually figured out that he was hiding in the basement. He had gone down basically to the base of the stairs. He flipped a couch over and he was sitting behind it with a shotgun waiting for the SWAT guys to come down the stairs. He was going to ambush them. So once he saw that the drone figured out where he was, he ditched the gun and tried to hide further back into the house. So we were able to get robots in there and another drone in there. And he eventually tried running up the stairs and our SWAT guys were waiting and got him in custody. So yeah, it was a win for the drone, and we've had lots more deployments like that since where we've been able to, like I said, just avoid potentially deadly use of force encounters by flying a drone into a house and being able to figure out where a suspect was or that they were armed.
Wow, this sounds like a science fiction movie, but this is real life happening today.
That's real crazy. life, and more and more police departments are starting to adopt it. Kind of the way the industry is going is you'll start in the next 3 to 5 years, I bet you'll start seeing a lot more DFR programs or drone as a first responder. If you've ever heard of Chula Vista, California's DFR?
Way down south.
Yeah, they kind of pioneered the DFR program, but it's starting to take off in a lot other areas of the country. They're starting to use drones. They're essentially mounted on fire stations throughout the city or city buildings, and they're on recharging docks. So as soon as a call comes in, what they'll do is or the dispatch center can push a button and the drone will automatically launch and fly to the call location. So it reduces response time. They can have a drone on scene of that call within 40 to 60 seconds versus potentially a few minutes for an officer. So if it's an in-progress call where a suspect has ran, like an armed robbery or something, they can get eyes on that person and they can use the drone to follow them until officers can get there and get them in custody. So it helps them reduce a lot of their call volume. They can cancel calls for service if they show up and the person's left. Or they can, you know, it cuts down on their investigative time because they can catch the bad guy instead of having to do investigation or follow up later.
Where's the pilot in command?
So typically the most of what they do is they'll have the pilot in command will actually be in the police department or the city building. Usually it's like a dispatcher or somebody that's running their real-time crime monitoring center. So it'll be connected via, you know, a 5G or 4G network. So they're flying it off a laptop or a computer. And then they'll have the VO be on the roof of that of the building. So if they're launching it from a fire department, they'll have the visual observer up on the roof. But then the actual pilot will be in, you know, a police department or a city building somewhere.
Does the FAA give you guys VVLOS rights to extend that flight? I mean, obviously, with your visual observer and its flying force minutes away, you're not going to see it any further. So I'm assuming beyond visual line of sight is an option here.
Yeah, so you can get through the FAA for police departments, fire departments, you can get what they now call their tactical VVLOS waiver, which is a little bit easier to get than just the regular VVLOS waiver. So that allows you to be able to at least fly behind buildings and obstacles, stuff like that. Typically what we found working in the city, because I work in a municipality, it's about 100,000 population, is as soon as we're getting close to our line of sight, we probably already lost signal anyway. Within the city on the drones that we're using, the signal strength will generally start to degrade just because we have so many, you know, a bombardment of Wi-Fi signals in town, cell towers, stuff like that. So we don't have a beyond line of sight waiver at our agency, and that's simply because I've honestly never found a time where we were outside line of sight that we still had connection with the drone. And most of the time, if we're setting up for like a fugitive track, we're probably going to have a perimeter set, and it's usually only going to be a block or two. Anything greater than that, the chances of actually finding that fugitive is going to be greatly decreased. So we try to set a narrow perimeter, so most of the time the drone's going to be well within line of sight in the area that we're flying. If it's anything bigger than several blocks, we're probably not going to have much success anyway.
So I have to assume that all of these drones are observation only. there's no net that they can drop Batman style to.
Yeah. No, unfortunately not. But the technology is advancing greatly just in what you can, you know, attach to a drone these days. Now we can put spotlights, we can put loudspeakers on them. Years ago, we couldn't. So it's really become a force multiplier, because now we can launch the drone, use the thermal camera to start checking an area, a neighborhood, a field, whatever. If we see a heat signature, instead of having to have our officers on foot go in and check to see, all right, is that somebody hiding, or is that a barbecue that's holding heat or an air conditioner? Now we can flip over to the daytime camera, hit that spotlight, be able to see what we're looking at. That's been hugely successful. We can put a speaker on there so we can give commands, over the drone. So if we have a suspect out in the field that's refusing to give up, we can put that, the speaker on it, fly it out to them.
So, I see you. You cannot hide.
I'm sure it probably freaks some people out, when they hear a voice from heaven shining, you know, or a beam from heaven coming down.
Especially if you call him by his name, Bob.
Yeah.
It's time to give up.
They just play Rush music till they give up.
Oh, hey, no call for that.
You also got to consider a lot of our clients are usually partaking in some substances, i.e. meth. So you can imagine when they're when they hear a voice and a light shining down from heaven, what's going on? Yeah.
You're not paranoid. They actually are following you.
Yes, exactly. Oh. That is a government drone.
So
go ahead, Lee.
I've mentioned in many previous episodes, I have no problems with drones. I'm a Part 107 pilot myself, not to the level you are by any means. But what always inspired me about the technology was being able to do search and rescue. Do you have a search and rescue story you can share with us?
Yes, we've had I've had a few apprehensions of missing persons with our drones. One in particular, we had a juvenile go missing from like a group home. He had walked away and had crossed a busy highway and was we kind of had a last direction of travel but didn't know where he was. So I launched the drone and I don't know, it took maybe 45 minutes, but I was able to pick up on thermal this juvenile walking through a field. He was heading the opposite direction from the group home. So we were able to get officers in the area and go down and get him picked up and returned home. So we've had a few captures like that with missing kids, dementia patients, people that weren't able to get back home were able to locate the drone with them. Definitely our primary kind of use case is more on the fugitive side, but we definitely, anytime we have someone that's missing, especially if they're at risk, any kind of decreased mental capacity, we'll launch the drones if we have a last known area to help locate them.
That's great to hear. As long as you're not like giving out jaywalking tickets via drone, you know, why yeah, you stop? It just like just drops a ticket for you.
Yeah,
we're not. I'm good for everything else you said. Just hope it doesn't go to that level where they're starting to follow you around.
Yeah, we launched our drone program back in 2017, so we were actually one of the first in Colorado. There was a couple others that were doing it before us. But we were definitely probably one of the few first in the nation that started launching drones in a law enforcement setting. So just because we've had them up and running so long, our program has had a lot of success, and it's something that, you know, we don't want to be the reason why drones get taken away from everybody. So right. We're careful about what we use them on. I can't say that about every agency. Some are starting to use drones for proactive patrol, things like that. And it scares me a little bit because, our public trusts us. They're 100% supportive of the drones that we use in the community because they see it as a great tool to keep us safe and keep them safe. And it's a great, thing to have that positive connection with the community, that they know that we're using this as a responsive tool, not a proactive tool, and that's what it should be. So it's something that we take seriously because we don't want to, like I said, be the reason that every agency can't use drones, because they are a huge game changer in law enforcement.
Well, when you were talking about Altitude Hobbies, you mentioned how quickly the technology is changing in terms of trying to sell it. But in terms of police use, how does that affect your the stuff that you're using?
Yeah, it's the same way. You know, with drones, it changes literally every few months. There's a new version coming out, and it's frustrating sometimes working on a government budget. You know, I only get a set amount of money every few years to buy stuff, and so you bring in something new that is the latest and greatest technology, and then within a short amount of time, there's already something newer and better out there. So. It's definitely evolving rapidly with what you can put on a drone as far as different accessories. The flight time just keeps increasing. I remember our first drones that we got back in 2017, we'd barely get 10 or 12 minute flight time, and now we're getting 30, 40 minute flight time. So that's hugely beneficial. So yeah, it keeps evolving, and it's going to keep evolving. Every few years, companies are coming out with new technology, and then they're wanting to one up each other. So it's great for us. It's definitely hard when you're on the buyer side of things for a government trying to bring stuff in, because you know, as we know with anything DJI, they always change their batteries every iteration of the drone that comes out. So it's like, I'll bring in four interior drones, and you know, we'll buy all kinds of accessories, batteries, and prop guards, and extra props for it. And then a few years, you know, a year or two goes by, and we want to bring in the new version of that drone, and they've changed all the accessories. So then you have to start all over again and buy all new stuff, and you know, it's just more money. But that's a little frustrating. But it's nice to see that things are just constantly evolving, and new technologies coming out, because it helps us greatly.
All right. I've got two questions. I'm afraid I'm going to forget one of them, but I'll start. You mentioned that you use DJI stuff. There's been some controversy about using DJI products in government capacity. So have you run into any of that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody knows about the legislation that's going on right now with trying to ban DJI and all the Chinese drone companies. Is it a real... a real thing? I'm sure it is. I don't have the connections with DJI to know what data they're harvisting, but
is the risk real?
I think the concern is real. When I know I've talked to some other companies that have said that, you know, DJI definitely is sharing some data, with the Chinese government. I'm sure that's happening, but, the stance that I've always had on it, the way that I look at it is, if they really care that much about seeing what altitude I'm flying a drone at in a small town in Colorado, you know, if they want to waste time on that, go for it. Cause I don't know what data they're going to harvest out of that. That's really going to be a concern to our safety. There's so many of these drones being used and employed all across the country that the amount of data that they're harvesting would be immense if they are. And personally, I don't know what they're going to benefit from it, other than seeing how many drones they're flying. So that's kind of my stance on it. Is it a concern? Yeah, I think it's definitely a concern, but I don't think it's there's ways to mitigate it. We don't use the will not be using the native DJI app to fly the drone. A lot of agencies that are running DJI stuff are switching over to using third-party apps to actually operate the drone, which mitigates a lot of that data being sent. So there's ways to continue using the DJI brand drones without giving all of that data over. So I don't think an all-out ban on DJI is warranted. I really don't. And I think it's going to hurt us long-term, because agencies all around the country are depending on DJI drones. There's not a lot of great alternatives out there when you look at dollar for dollar the technology and the reliability that you get from their products. So banning them all outright, I don't think is the right answer. But I think that agencies, especially, you know, from a government standpoint, there's ways that you can mitigate that risk if you're really concerned about it. And that is using third-party apps instead of the native DJI app to be able to still operate that drone and not give over that data.
Is that a jailbreak kind of situation?
No, No, it's actually not. It's a, it's just, there's, different companies out there that sell, sell, their products for like live streaming. Axon is one of them. Axon is the company that makes, our, body cameras that we use. They have a product called Axon Air, which is powered by DroneSense, that lets, you be able to live stream the video feed into like our command center or to our SWAT team leader, that kind of thing. And they actually use, they have their own app developed that basically works exactly like the native DJI app. You operate the drone through their app. But instead of, you know, giving the data to DJI, being able to do that limits the amount of data that's being shared, and most agencies are switching over to that. So when you look at agencies like, or states like Florida that did an all-out DJI ban, that's what you're kind of seeing the direction that they're going now, is there was so much backlash from government entities that were using DJI stuff down in Florida. The legislators are now looking at kind of walking that back and saying, okay, you can use DJI, but you have to use a third party app to be able to operate it, which I think is a good happy medium. Like I said, if that concern is real for some of this data that's being shared, I think it's a good happy medium to be able to let agencies continue to use these drones that are out there saving lives every single day, not be able to lose that technology, but still protect our data and our infrastructure and, you know, everything else. So.
I mean, I'm going to jump in here. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I think that's a really cool alternative to the ban. You're right. Absolutely. I'm assuming some of these third-party apps are open source. Do they offer more utilities, functionality than the standard DJI app? Like, I have a Mavic Air.
Yeah, most of them aren't open source, actually. Most of them are made by companies, like I said, Axon, DroneSense. Some of them that are, these are companies that are selling their software to actually operate the drone. And it usually ties into whatever software they're selling. So like Axon, you know, they have the ability to be able to upload the drone feed remotely to our evidence server, so that we're not having to download the video later off the SD card. They have the ability to live stream. They have, you know, different data logging functions built into their platform. So that's what they kind of sell. So they want you to use their app to obviously be able to do that. So there's different functionalities as far as, like I said, the live streaming is huge. That's been something that's always been a struggle of ours with DJI stuff, is being able to send that drone feed from the pilot's controller to like our mobile command center so that our SWAT commander can see that feed and make tactical decisions based off of it. That's always been definitely something that's hard. So that's a functionality that is built into it. But as far as functions of the drone, there's not really a lot that it adds. It's basically they're just taking the native DJI app interface and kind of building onto their own their own platform.
All right, so I mentioned I had another question before. It's purely technical. You had mentioned that in Chula Vista, they have the drones sitting on a recharging station. And it sounds like that's not something that you have in your area yet.
So
no. I just assume you're on call when they need you. So in terms of battery management, how do you take care of being ready with fully charged batteries yet not, you know, but also keeping them in, you know, a good charged state?
Yeah, so that's there's kind of two parts to that. As far as the batteries go, it's definitely something that is hard in public safety and, you know, an industry where we need to be able to launch a drone at moment's notice. Because obviously all the DJI stuff, you know, their intelligent flight batteries automatically discharge after 10 days to go down to a storage site, storage life. And as we know, you know, it's bad on a lithium battery to be storing it at 100%, but that's unfortunately what we have to do, because to be able to have good flight time, we have to keep our batteries, close to 100% all the time. So we just kind of accept that, we're going to be going through batteries faster than a consumer would. We have our batteries on a rotation schedule. So, they definitely, we don't get the cycles out of them that, that, you know, a consumer is going to be seeing. When we used to run Matrice 200 platforms, a few years ago, that's what we started with. Those batteries, we were only seeing about 30 cycles out of before they would start to swell. Just because not only from having to keep them at 100% charge all the time, but you got to consider, you know, we work 24/7, 365. So those batteries are, you know, in the back of a patrol car in a case, getting bounced around. They're in the heat, they're in the cold. You know, every bad thing that you can do for a battery, we have to do. So we just kind of accept that we're going to be going through batteries quicker than the manufacturer says. We're not on call, but we do respond out. So I have a team of pilots that basically when we try to have an operator on all the time. There's a total of 8 of us on the team. So we have enough that we usually have an operator on, per shift on each end of the week. So if they need a drone, hopefully there's a pilot that's already working. But if there's not, our supervisors, our dispatch center can page us, and we'll respond in off duty. We take our drones home, so that, if there's a call, like a fugitive track or something like that, we just, respond straight to the scene, and we can launch a drone. So, kind of same thing with SWAT. If our SWAT team is getting activated, we just, respond in with them, and then, we have, you know, drones ready to go, just like our, robots. So,
well, it sounds like the takeaway here is don't buy used batteries at the police auction.
Yeah. Most of them get recycled because we use our batteries until they're swelled and we can't use them anymore. Right now we're running the Mavic 3 thermal platforms. I've had better success with those. I think the battery technology has come a long way since 2017, 2018 with DJI stuff, but we'll see. Already, those batteries seem to be holding up a lot better than the old Matrice batteries. So hopefully they'll last longer. We run Avadas and mini DJI minis for our interior operations. So those are the minis I've been using for, I think, 3 or 4 years now, and those batteries are still holding up. They're starting to, the life cycle starting to degrade. I'm only getting about half the flight time that I used to, but they're at least not swelling. So.
All right, cool. Well, I'm glad we talked about all this stuff, because usually on the show we do a lot of griping and moaning about the nonsensical commercial uses that are proposed for drones, and we haven't really seen applied yet. So the fact that you're out there doing good work with this stuff makes me feel a little better about all the regulations that we're dealing with in the hobby.
So. Yeah, it's like I said, it's something that a lot of people don't know. You know, there's a good chance the police department where you live is using drones, just because they're being so widely adopted now. But you know, most agencies are being careful about what they're using them for. They're using them on, you know, life or death situations, and it's a tool no different than anything else that we have. You know, our canines, our armored vehicles, our SWAT equipment, anything like that. It's stuff that's designed to keep us safe, but it's also designed to get the suspect into custody without us having to use force. And anytime that we can do that, it's a win for us. So, it's definitely been successful. Between we rolled out our new Mavic 3 thermals about a year ago this time. And within about a 2-month period, we had 8 apprehensions that were attributable to the drones. So those were basically instances where the bad guy wouldn't have gotten caught if we didn't have a drone up. So that was 8 apprehensions that we were able to net, that not only, you know, kept the community safer because we got these people in custody, but it cut down immensely on our follow-up time having to try to locate this person later.
Oh, that's awesome. So, Lee, did you have any more questions?
No, thank you for sharing that with us. Again, that's something I like to hear. Again, the positive uses, not cake or coffee delivery. I'm anti-lazy delivery drone, so lazy drone delivery, excuse me. But yeah, that appeals to me. And I guess one question I'll ask is how would someone get into that? Like, what if someone wanted to, you know, join the police force to get into their drone program? Is there a pathway?
Yeah, so basically what we do is similar to any of our specialized assignment appointments. You know, we have a testing process for it. So it's generally we'll have, if someone's interested, if one of our officers is interested in being on the team, we'll have them submit a letter of interest. We usually do a panel interview with current members on the team where they'll ask certain questions just to see how they're going to be a fit on the team. We may have them, you know, go out on training day with us so they can operate the drone, kind of see what it's like, what it's going to take to actually fly it. And then the biggest thing we're looking for is just the time commitment aspect, because, you know, even though we're not on call, it's kind of our expectation that if we get paged out in the middle of the night, you know, the 3 a.m. SWAT call comes, that we're dropping everything and we're going in. So it's really going to take, it takes somebody that is dedicated and sees the usefulness of the drone and believes in the program. So those are kind of all the aspects that we look at when we're picking somebody to be on the team. And it's, you know, I have a great team of pilots that does a great job. So, it's really no different than any other specialized assignment within our agency.
I'm going to call my Harris County Sheriff's Department and see if I can get a drone ride along.
Yeah,
you
certainly find out to see if, like I said, a lot of agencies are starting to use them more and more. And most agencies are set up how we're doing it, where they have specific officers that are trained and that have their 107 that are carrying the drone with them on the street. That way, if a call comes out, that officer just drives straight to the scene and launches the drone. Some, you know, agencies that don't have a lot of drones may, you know, deploy it from the station, if they need it, that kind of thing. But, I know a lot of the agencies around here, at least, are working the same way we are.
You're muted, buddy.
There I am. Yeah, so I'm muted because, you know, I'm in the basement above me. Somebody started the dryer, they started the washing machine, and they flushed the toilet all at the same time. So you'll hear that in the recording. But I was trying to make a jokely. It's probably not going to be funny anymore. It probably wasn't funny in the beginning. But I was saying when you go on the ride-along, they're not going to have the interior drone, so they're just going to send you into the basement to find the poop.
I got you.
With the shotgun.
This is not what I thought.
Yeah. I've had many embarrassing story on drone flights. That's the one downside to drones is they're, when you're flying them into a house, as you can imagine, it's a little unpredictable sometimes. So especially if we've like broken a window or a door down and it's windy out, you get some weird drafts, weird wind currents in houses. If fans are on, it'll blow you around a lot. So right in front of the entire SWAT team, I got a drone hung up on a pull string of a fan. Flew it right into the fan, and it got wrapped up. All the pull string got caught in the props, and it just started spinning around the air. So it's definitely not 100% successful all the time.
I want to see the clip where you go into the house and the guy's in there and he goes, "Hey, look, free drone." He grabs it. It's like, he's on the camera. "Look, I got a free drone here."
Actually, I had a guy trying to hide under a bed, and I got the drone in there, figured out where he was. I was hovering it and the drone malfunctioned. I still don't know what happened. I think a motor went out, but the drone stayed where it was at, but it just started spinning around at like 1,000 RPM. So I was getting dizzy watching the drone feed because this thing's just spinning in a circle like over and over and over. So finally I land it, and next thing we know, the guy pops out the window with the drone and throws it back at me and says, "Here's your toy back." We're like, well, now that's, we great, know where you're off, where you are. So it worked.
Yeah, it's like, sure. I say, you did your job. You found him. Yeah. You annoyed him. He, you know,
he fell for it.
Exactly. It was bait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Garrett, thanks for sharing all the inside information. Yeah. That's really cool to hear. Now, Lee, let's move on to the next thing. And did you want to introduce this or did you want me to?
You.
Yeah. All right. Whatever. I'll bat 1,000 tonight. So on our Facebook page a few weeks ago, we talked about this event that our buddy Michael Rosnick was hosting in, where was it? Grand Prairie, Texas. You tell me, Lee, is that around Dallas somewhere?
I'm sure it is. That's,
okay.
I want to say Fort Worth, Dallas. Yeah.
The
I don't know the field.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm sure it's in that neighborhood. Golden Triangle Radio Control Club, fourth annual heli fly-in. I wasn't there. You weren't there. I don't think Fitz Garrett was there. Fitz wasn't there. But our buddy Raymond was there, and he talked to Michael. So we have a video interview of Raymond with Michael. And do we also have a slideshow?
I'm showing it right now.
Yeah, okay, so there's a slideshow going with some pics. And Michael always has really cool scale helis. And it looks like there was some 3D flying going on there too. So neat stuff. And what I'll do is I'll just insert that interview here for people who are watching the video on YouTube. You'll see it. For people who are listening, just audio only in your car or wherever you happen to be, some of this video is just the sounds of helicopters flying around. So we won't make you listen to that. So we'll edit that video to just the interview parts, and that'll come as well. So for any of you heli pilots out there, I think you'll be interested in this. And for any heli curious people such as me, I think you'll also find it interesting. So yeah, neat stuff. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, we should have him back on. We haven't had Michael on since the B1 chat.
Yeah. Well, was it that one when he was listening on the live show and we just invited him immediately? Was that it?
Yeah. It was from the hip.
Yeah, it was.
How's it going, RC Roundtable? It's Michael Rosnick here at that Golden Triangle Annual Helicopter Fun Fly and saying hi to Fitz, Terry, and Lee. And we're going to take a quick walk around and look at some of the stuff here at the event. We've got a huge amount of RC helicopters and pilots that have showed up from all across the DFW area, across the state of Texas, in fact. And a lot of great raffle prizes and things going on today. Look around, we've got a lot of the current modern 3D helicopters, stuff from SAB, from Tron, Logo, Align, and a few of my aircraft here that are scale helicopters, the Huey H5, H34, and Bell 47. And over here we have Q Smith up from the Corsicana area and his absolutely beautiful Vario scale helicopters, R22, which is in fact for sale, and his beautiful Bell 430. Absolutely one of the most amazing helicopters at this event to me.
RC helicopters to you.
That is pretty
cool. And here's your nose wheel takeoff.
So I'm with RC Roundtable. How are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good. What do we got today?
We got the Goose Guy R7.
It's Terry and Lee. Hopefully you guys enjoyed watching some of the highlights here. And please visit our website at gtrcc.org for any more information. Hoping to see you guys at next year's helicopter event.
So the next thing on the list is project updates. We haven't done a workbench update in a long time, at least not as an official topic. So Garrett, you're up first. Tell us what you're building.
Right now on the workbench, I have working on a little foamy, a little TA Horizons Wicked Slick. So I'm trying to get that put together. Other than that, just finished up. Probably the last thing I finished up that I haven't flown yet that I'm waiting to fly is I got a free wing, the Blue Angels 90mm F-18.
Ooh, nice.
Got together. So, and then after that, the next project I'm going to start working on is the free wing AL-37.
the 737 looking plane from Free Wing, the giant one. So my brother's a United pilot, so I'm going to deck it out in a United scheme. I'm going to custom paint it. I got some graphics from Cali Graphics. I'm going to do a realistic United scheme on it. So
cool. Now, you mentioned the F-18, and that brings me back to our conversation earlier. At 5,000 feet, you can't go to a bigger fan or probably not another cell. How do you deal with EDF power at that altitude?
You know, the newer EDFs I really haven't had an issue with. I was talking about that one older one that I had years ago that was way underpowered. It's definitely always kind of, up until a few years ago, made me hesitant to try another EDF. But these newer ones out on the market, honestly, are with the higher voltage power systems and the bigger fans they're putting in them these days, seem to handle the altitude better. I have one of Free Wing's, I think it's their 80 millimeter Arctic Camo F-16. And that thing does great up here. So I'm excited to see how the F-18 goes. I'm sure it's gonna do great. But the newer EDFs with these 6L setups seem to be powerful enough to handle the extra altitude.
Hmm. Does that suggest that you have a paved runway at your flying site?
Yeah, so we have here in Colorado, we have a few clubs around. I'm kind of equidistant to two clubs. One is Love Air RC, which hosted Warbirds Over the Rockies for quite a few years back in the day. They have a 1,000-foot paved runway, either 800 or 1,000, I can't remember. So it's a pretty big flying site.
And 800's not enough.
One of the other clubs nearby, they have a geotextile runway, but I think it's 1,000 feet also, I want to say.
Oh my gosh.
The club,
what are they flying out there?
Downhill.
a lot of big gassers and jets. There's a lot of turbine pilots around here. So Love Air has always had a pretty big turbine group, and then a lot of big gassers, a lot of 33-40% IMAC guys, 3D guys. So it's that club's been around for quite a while. I used to belong to the club that I grew up in, and that I belonged to, that I learned to fly at, was the Rocky Mountain Modeliers, which is kind of in the Fort Collins area. I actually, their first flying site that I used to fly at was behind a sporting goods store in this tiny little parcel property, and they had a 100-foot paved runway that was falling apart. You had to watch out for potholes when you took off, and it was infested with prairie dogs. There was prairie dog holes everywhere, but that site went away because the city started building up around it. So then they built another field. Up north of Fort Collins, we put in a 250-foot paved runway, and then one of the projects that I was in charge of when I was president of that club for a few years was I expanded it using the geotextile fabric. So we kind of mated the fabric to the end of the runway to extend it to 400 feet. It worked great. So those are the three main clubs that we kind of have around my area.
Oh, nice. All right, Lee, you're up. What are you building, buddy?
Well, oddly enough, and I won't, I'm not going to tell you how to tune a guitar, if you get my drift. I was in my workshop last week. I shared photos with Fitz and Terry on a project I was working on. If I haven't mentioned it before, my youngest is into airsoft, and I'm into it as well. And we've been working on some rifles, and I got one for Austin because he wanted one. He's my oldest. So I changed out our triggers on my rifle and his rifle. His was pretty beat up. It was a contact switch. So I replaced his with my old micro switch, and I upgraded to a magnetic switch. But I bring this up because I was in my workshop sitting at my bench soldering and working and tinkering. And it's like, you know, this was fun. This is the kind of, I should be working on airplanes, but it just, I was getting, I guess, I want to say teary-eyed, but it's like, this is the stuff my dad taught me how to do, you know, just be brave, you know, take the screws out, figure out how it goes back together. And I did, you know, and it wasn't too hard. It was time consuming, but I think I mentioned this to you, Terry, the worst part of this project was not, you know, working with the small pieces. It's when you dropped a piece and couldn't find it. And you know, my workshop's pretty darn bright, but there was a time when I was looking for a screw for 30 minutes and I had to go back in the house to just calm myself down because I was like, how did I lose the screw? It should have just dropped right here. So that's just my old man eyes, I guess. But otherwise, got them both working, and that was a lot of fun. Currently, though, I have received back in my possession the, what is it, Flight? What's the P-38, the Red Bull P-38? What was the name of the company?
Flight Works.
Thank you. I had sold it to a gentleman and his son. His son loves it. We flew it together at our field, and he has been flying it, but he had a rough landing, and the nose gear kind of went bendy on him, and he was struggling to figure it out. So I actually called him up and said, hey, I'll just take it off your hands. I'll bring it back to my workshop, and I'll work on it. So it's currently upside down with the nose gear staring at me with a nice curve in the nose gear. So I will attack that this weekend and see if I can fix it for him. And I still have, you know, gosh, it's like I hate this part because I still have so many planes that are just staring at me that need to be done. The Spacewalker, the B-25, Ryan's B-25, Starfire, not my Starfire 40, excuse me, a 234, gosh darn it. Another plane. I guess I got so many darn in there, but I need to go flying, actually. I probably need to go take a break and get back in the field. So
you say that like it's a problem. You have lots of fun projects awaiting you.
I have projects, but it's like I have this kid named Ryan who's so busy in school. I've been just taking him everywhere. I need to just escape to the flying field. Yeah. So maybe I could do that. Last time we were at our club meeting and I knew I couldn't fly. It was like 20 mile an hour winds. Steady. So there was no flying that day, my friend.
You've flown in that before, I'm sure. We used to fly the first generation T-28s in that.
Sure.
Without a care in the world.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure I was puckering there. Anyway, that's it. Nothing else.
It's funny you mentioned about dropping things. I was thinking that last week sometime. I've got two workbenches in here now. One, the workbench I've had forever, but it's a little bit, the bottom shelf is elevated off the ground. And of course, I drop things every now and then. E-clips, set screws, whatever. They never just drop and stay there. And I even put a little carpet here so things wouldn't bounce as far. But 9 out of 10 times, it bounces off the top of my shoe and shoots under the table into a black hole, never to be found again. So I want to make a graph or find a graph somewhere of the probability of ever finding something you drop at your workbench.
Well, I'm going to add one of my insane issues was in airsoft. If you're using an electric, or it was called AEG, you've got a brushed motor with high-end neodymium magnets, and it's in the handle. It's in the grip of the rifle. But I took it out. I laid it on the table. And I accidentally bumped it, and it went across the table where all the screws were, and everything just went, you know, every tool I had just collected into the motor. So, I mean, in a way, it's a way to collect everything, but boy, that was a nightmare. Just like, I was like, how did all of that attach? It was just like a cartoon from, the coyote.
Right. Acme super magnet.
It was. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
All right. Well, for my workbench, I actually do have some new things. So I mentioned I have two workbenches here now. One is only recently a workbench. It was a shelf until a couple weeks ago. I finally cleared it off, and the plane I've been talking about forever, years, my SR Batteries Eindecker, is finally on the table and getting work done. I bought that plane when I lived in Houston. So how long ago was that? It was probably more than 10 years ago because I moved out of Houston in 2013. Anyway, a friend of Fitz and I, a guy who was in the JSC club with us, Mike McGraw, he passed away unexpectedly and they had an estate sale for him. So I bought this airplane from his estate. The wings had already been built, but everything else was still in the box and everything was there. And for those who aren't familiar with this SR Batteries model, it was pretty modern for the time. It's an old airplane, but they use carbon fiber leading edge, carbon fiber spar. All the parts are laser cut. So it was a really supposed to be a quick build kit, not like your, what was that, your SIG quick build Cessna, Lee? Yeah.
Yeah.
This quick, one.
K-W-I-K.
Yeah. So I'm really enjoying it. All the parts go together well. It's a great kit. But despite all of the modernness of it, there's still a lot of very traditional work to do. For instance, I built the elevators last week. The leading edge of the elevator, by the way, this is a giant scale airplane, 100-inch wingspan. So the elevator too, though. But building the ailerons, all the parts are laser cut, and the ribs are two laminated pieces of balsa you put together, and you glue it all to like over a spar on the plans. But the leading edge of the aileron is four pieces of 1/8-inch balsa laminated together. So you end up with a 1/2-inch piece of balsa. And then you have to shave it and sand it to an angled leading edge shape. It seems like they could have eliminated some of that effort there. So as much as I'm enjoying putting it together, which I am, and it's going together well, there's still just a lot of sanding and things like that. And if I've never mentioned this before, I do not enjoy sanding at all. At all. I always break something. And knowing that this was going to be a big job here, I have a belt sander. I brought that into my workshop thinking I was going to make quick work of it. It went fast, but there was this cloud of balsa dust all in my workshop. And now there's balsa dust on everything. So that was only for the first aileron. After that, I went outside and sanded it in my driveway. But anyway, it's moving along quickly. I've got the wings are done. All the tail surfaces are done. You see me glancing over here. I'm looking at the other table to see where I'm at. I'm starting on the fuselage. You have to do scarf joints on the stringers to make them long enough. So I've done that. So I think pretty soon here I'll actually be starting on getting the fuselage together and getting this thing down the road. So I'm excited about it.
But in the middle of all, I was going to try to see if I could pull up a photo of it. There's a couple, but the images are small, so I won't do that.
All right. So in the middle of all that, I had a review model come in. And it's one we talked about on the show. I don't remember if it was last episode or the episode before that. So excuse me while I grab this airplane. Hold on. A little bit of acrobatics there. So it's the E-Flight RJ Gritter Decathlon. And there you see. For those of you listening, it's a red, white, and blue decathlon. So, yeah, I got it Monday of this week. I maidened it on Tuesday, and I flew it a bunch more yesterday. So, a neat airplane. And we had talked a little bit on the show about the color scheme, which we only knew through the website then. But in real life, it's just as impressive as it is on the website. It's lots of colors, very intricate, very clean. So, neat airplane. Any questions about it since I got one in my grubby hand?
Are you going to make it a banner towing plane? You going to do that for your club? Looks like it would be fun to pull a banner behind it.
I guess you could. It hadn't crossed my mind yet, but yeah, sure. What do you want the banner to say?
I don't know. Welcome to our new flying site. When you have opening day.
Lee rules.
I like that one too. I approve.
Yeah. So I will say, I don't want to say too much about the flying stuff because you'll have to read the article for that. But it's a pretty wide range of batteries, all the way from a 3-cell 2200 up to a 4-cell like 3300. I've so far flown on all of those, and it does great on each of them. It balances without any ballast on any of those, and it also has plenty of power even on the 3-cell stuff. So my overall impression so far is generally positive. So I'm glad I got it.
Okay. I'll wait for the review.
You know, you have the inside one. No, he got something else, but he got a different review plane, but
he got a Cherokee, didn't he?
Oh, I was going to let him say.
Oh, well, I mean, it's on his Hobby View channel.
Oh, is it? Then yes.
Yeah. That's what he got. He's already posted it. Yeah.
Oh, dang. He's fast.
Yeah.
All right, and I got one more thing on my workbench that I just put on the workbench today. You
Garrett
guys
has
might
gone
remember.
Into darkness. Did the eclipse happen again? Oh. he's like black and white eerie. Yeah. He's like, whoa.
It's right at the time the sun's going down in Colorado.
Speaking of all natural light.
Let me turn a light on here. I didn't need it when we started the show.
It's okay. He's just like, didn't he look a little eerie? It's like he's going to give us some bad news.
There it is. So the last thing on my workbench, we talked several episodes ago about a glue caddy that we gave some away, right?
Yeah,
we did. I asked Fitz to send me one. And he did, but that cheeky little monkey, he made his own version. The original version that he designed for us had our logo on it, laser engraved in there. He also had one with his HobbyView channel logo, and that's the one he sent me. So I went to Menards today and got some blue wood stain, intending to do RC Roundtable themed caddy. But that's when I discovered that I had a HobbyView caddy. That's all right. So now I have a blue HobbyView caddy. Haven't actually glued it together yet. It's just friction fit together. But I'll put some glue on it tonight, and then I'll have my glue caddy. Goes together well.
So, and did Fitz send me a glue caddy?
You live with the same town.
Did Fitz send me a glue caddy?
I don't know. I assumed you had one.
The answer is no.
Did you ask Fitz for a glue
caddy? I do not have one. Did you ask him specifically to give you one, or did you just say, hey, if you ever get around to it?
No, I keep going, referring to past episodes. We, several episodes ago, talked about Fitz helping me to buy a lot of RC cars down in Houston, and he went and picked them up, and he was shipping me two of those cars. I'm like, hey, buddy, while you're packing up that box for Wisconsin, throw a caddy in there.
Yeah. And yeah. So while he was printing yours, he could have just hit two copies. He just goes hit the two. Just add one more for my buddy Lee. Nope. I'm gonna hold him to it. When he comes on the show next time, I'm going to go, where is my guy? The funny thing is, we've been texting this because Terry mentioned it before the show earlier. And we'll see if he does it. But I asked mine to be in mahogany with the inlay in gold. So we'll see if Fitz follows through.
Do you think his laser will cut mahogany?
Let's find out. Right? Yeah. I'm going to have the nicest CA tray ever.
Right. So, yeah, those three things. That's what's on my workbench, along with the constant flow of things that go in and out, the quick fixes and the fun little side projects. So those are the big ones. I think it's going to be a little while for this Eindecker to get finished. My goal is to have it ready for the Warbirds and Classics event that's in Fond du Lac in August. Yeah.
That's huge.
It is. But now I haven't told anybody else this yet because I just figured it out earlier today. Looking at our family plans, I might actually be on vacation with my family during that event. So I'm not sure I'm going to make that Warbirds and Classics gig, but we'll see. But in any event, I want to get this airplane finished for that.
And honey, I'm going to go to the grocery store. I'll be right back. Yeah,
just getting some milk.
Zoom.
I was thinking it just sounds like fun for the whole family.
Right. That excuse only works once. Speaking of flying events, Lee, do you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in though. It's like, I think I told you though, this is, Cindy didn't want to go the last year for AirVenture, but she's actually like, I'm okay to go again. So I think all four of us were heading up to come see you for AirVenture, which is awesome.
All right. We'll keep the line.
Ryan did not want to miss it this year. He was so jealous last year. So he's like, he's all in. So
you're bringing the whole family?
I'm bringing the whole family.
All right.
To AirVenture.
Nice.
But you are mentioning another event coming up, and I kind of teased it on our Facebook page for some folks, but
nobody cared. Like nobody even noticed.
Nobody cared. What? But I'm announcing right now, unfortunately without Fitz, that the three amigos from the RC Roundtable podcast will be attending the AMA National Fun Fly this summer, June 28th through the 30th. We will be there, folks. Fitz and I haven't decided if we're going to drive with the trailer or take a quick flight and have Terry bring all the goody airplanes down with him from Green Bay. But talking with my boss, he's like, I missed a couple events, and one was Top Gun because they canceled it, and that was on my schedule for this year. So I had an opening, and turns out I don't have any conflict with the family or other events. So I am heading back to Muncie, and I hope to see many of you guys there as well. This is their big fun fly. It's being redone by the foundation, the AMA Foundation, and they are bringing in a lot of vendors. We're going to have a lot of events going on, so this is going to be a huge turnout. And I plan with my buddies to do some live feeds while we're there. In fact, I kind of elbowed our IT department, said, guys, we really need better Wi-Fi out at the sites. And it's something that they had been discussing anyway. So through the, I don't know, I'm not going to say pressure. It sounds like they're going to crank things up out there. So we'll have some good Wi-Fi connections to do live feeds and have a blast. But the museum will be open. There's going to be some student, or I say student, kid events up at the headquarters building. And I just can't wait to see Site 4, because I saw it when they were planting all the sod. I didn't get to participate down there during Nats. But hopefully they'll have some renovations done down there, and we'll get some flying in. And that'll be great. And, of course, we'll catch up with each other the following month for AirVenture. But this is going to be great, guys. So I hope to see you there. Joe Vermillion will be down there as well. So we'll hang out with him and walk around the sites and interview people and stuff like that. So hope to see you guys there. Go to our page. Let's see if I have to pull this page down. Stand by. So for those of you listening, disregard what I'm saying right now. Terry will cut to the next thing. But if you go to modelaircraft.org/funfly, you can go to the website and register. And by the way, registration this year is free.
Nice.
There is no cost to go in. And that's awesome. And, you know, there's some stuff you can buy. So, yeah, spend your money there. There'll be some big raffles. And I'm sorry to say I have not put the RC Roundtable sticker here yet. It will be there. But this is a list of all the vendors that will be there.
I thought that was a perk just to get us to come. Hey, we'll waive your entry fee.
I told him to put the logo right there. I mean, it's round. It should be right at the front of the page. But gosh, I'm really excited to go, guys. We've been wanting to build this event more and more, and some people are hesitant to go up to Muncie. It's in the middle of nowhere. Guys, if you've been, and if you've seen some of the videos we posted, and maybe some of the stuff I posted when Austin and I went to Nats last year, it is an incredible site, guys. It is a great place to fly. And I can't say it was as cool and exciting as, you know, Triple Tree. Just, you know, that's a little different. I mean, there's just a lot of people have been going there for years. But guys, this would be my second, you know, favorite place to fly. It is such a great location. And please, you know, make a trip to Indianapolis if you're flying, and then drive in, and we'll have planes to. And in fact, I was just joking with some of the guys there. We still have planes from Camp AMA. I'm yanking them out. I'm gonna get all the Camp AMA planes out. We're gonna fly those. So anyway, I can go on and on, but book it, guys. June 28th through the June 30th in Muncie, Indiana, AMA headquarters, the National Fun Fly.
All right, cool. I'm excited about that. Should be fun.
And then come to AirVenture and see us there at Pioneer Runway. Yeah, flying our butts off in the evening. Yep.
If you do drive up, bring plywood overcast. It needs more signatures.
God, can I get plywood overcast on Pioneer Runway? It's too heavy.
No, I meant for the fun fly.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Now I have to take the trailer.
Well, yeah. If you bring the trailer, bring plywood overcast. That's all I'm saying. You got some time to think about it.
I don't know if Garrett knows what plywood overcast is.
So. I don't. I'm intrigued. I just thought we were still talking about the piece of foam that you had at the beginning.
No, let me see if I can pull it up real quick. I'm sure it's on our Facebook page.
So, Garrett, I have a reputation of haunting Facebook Marketplace and finding these obscure airplanes. When I lived in Buffalo, which was from 2017 to 2023, I found this airplane there. Nobody knew anything about it. I ended up trading this guy a little RC boat for like five airplanes, and this was one of them. And I couldn't tell this in the picture, but I went to pick it up, and this airplane had a 20-foot wingspan. And it was made out of, yeah, it's even hard to tell here how big it is. Are there any pictures of somebody standing next to it? But anyway, it was made out of like cabinet plywood, this very high grade, very dense plywood, and it was built excellently, but the thing was just heavy as heck. And it's only a three-channel airplane, rudder, elevator, throttle. And so I took it upon myself to make this thing fly as the world's biggest three-channel park flyer. So we take it to events when we can, and when we hand the transmitter around, and when a guest has flown it, they sign their name on it. So it's just a little fun thing that we do when we can. But it's big, and it's awkward, and it's hard to travel with. So, you know, it doesn't get to go as many places as we would like. and it's currently resident in Lee's garage.
Yeah, that looks like it would not be fun to transport.
Yeah, the outer wings come off. It's a three-piece wing, so you've got a center section, which is half the span, and then two outer panels come off.
It's the other project that I've been working on. I had to get a bed extender for my truck in anticipation of getting this free wing AL37 because it's too big to fit.
Oh, nice. All right, so Lee.
Saw the Seth banner there. Seth's coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, are you going?
I'm not going, but I've sponsored Seth for years. So anybody out there that's going, make sure to look for the Altitude Hobbies banner on the flight line. And we sent a lot of prizes to them. So
cool. If
you get picked for the raffle, look out for some Altitude Hobbies merch.
All right. Yeah, there it is. All right. So Lee, you about ready to wrap this thing up? Garrett has a job to go to. You're muted there, buddy. Lee, you're muted.
Just let him roll with it.
Oh,
there we go.
Darn it. I was like, had some great, you missed all the good stuff.
I know.
I was just going to say, yeah, let him go find some perps and get him arrested.
Oh, yeah. Go fly in some basements. Yep. All right. Well, Garrett, thanks for joining us. And thanks for telling us about Altitude Hobbies. And also thanks for sharing the law enforcement side of drone use. Very eye-opening for me. So,
yeah, this was great. Happy to be on, guys. Really appreciate you having me, and it's been a blast.
All right. If you have any more good cops and robbers story, send us an email. Let us know.
All right. I'll see if I can find out about that multiplex plane for you, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll be cool. All
right. I'll send you an email.
All right, cool. Anything else to add, Lee?
If you want to send us an email, contact at rcroundtable.com. If you have any questions for Garrett, just go to altitudehobbies.com and ask him. And again, go look at the little motor blog. That's a great little help for if you're new to the hobby.
All right.
And hopefully next time. I mean, we haven't had a live show in a while, so maybe the next show might be live with Fitz.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about his travels again.
We need to do our bingo cards for the live show.
Oh, well, you haven't. Yeah, we've got to work on that.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe we plan for that, too.
Yeah, all right. Well, Garrett, we're going to do a little bit of closing credits here, but stick around. We'll say goodbye to you after that. So for everybody else, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And what does Fitz always say? Like, subscribe, smash the like button, whatever it is he says.
Leave us a positive comment. Increase our algorithm.
Yeah,
tell
we
your
appreciate
friends.
You. So yes, all those
thank
things.
Thank you.
Imagine Fitz's voice. Serenading you.
Just grab it from the last episode, throw it in here.
There we go.
We'll cut and paste.
Fitz will probably be back next time. But 'tis the season where it's not uncommon for one of us to be out on a family vacation or a work thing, whatever. So you get what you get. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Please visit our website at rcroundtable.com. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes. You can also find a little bit of background information about the show host and leave comments and suggestions about the show. There are links to a few of our favorite vendors and also links to our various social media accounts. Thank you for watching and listening.